I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Fulfilling my own destiny. And my throat apparently is fulfilling its own destiny today. I apologize for that cough during the song. This is Cindy Freeman on Purpose Talk Radio. And I say a good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to all of you who are listening today. As I said, this is Purpose Talk Radio on Blog Talk Radio. We air every Monday at this time at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern and 8 p.m. in the UK. And I welcome you here. It is still kind of cool in here in the Midwest, for those of you who don't know, of course. So we're kind of still huddled under the electric blankets, and of course in the summer you'll probably be hearing that I'm like too warm, so you never know what it's going to be out in this world. And our guest today is Jenny Robertson, and she'll be talking to us about living purpose as a business tool, and I'll bring her on in a few minutes. I would like to let you know that if you'd like to suggest a guest, be a guest, sponsor or donate to the show, or listen to any of the archives that we have, you can go to our website at purposetalkradio.com. That's purposetalkradio.com. If you wish to email me any kind of messages, you can do that directly, cindy@purposetalkradio.com. You can also reach me on Facebook. We have a Facebook page at Purpose Talk Radio. We also have two opportunities for you to be able to chat with us today. One is at the Blog Talk Radio chat room that goes with this show. If you are logged in on your computer, you can get into that chat room by scrolling down to the bottom of the screen. And we have a couple of guests in there listening to us, so I appreciate that. The other way you can chat and carry on a discussion is over at Purpose Talk Radio Conversations on Facebook. Again, it's Purpose Talk Radio Conversations. And over there, we have chats throughout the week about the show, before, after, during, and, you know, just whatever resonates with you. And that discussion page is specifically for topics related to what our guests have to say or related to living your purpose. And just want to let people know there's a couple people that did have been posting some other things on there. If they're related to the show, I'll gladly leave them up there. If they are about your own things, I've got some other groups I'd gladly suggest to you if you want to send me a message and let me know what you want to talk about, because I am involved in many, many groups. And let's see, what else do we have? Oh, yes, the song that you heard this afternoon to start our show, and the same one that does end up finishing our show, is by the group True Trinity. The song is called I Am Who I Am, and that group is Rachel Martinez, Jillian Clark, and myself. And that was part of way back when this show started a couple of years ago. Well, we're going on about 3 years now, with Barbara Patterson and Jan Revelle. And when they were creating this show, they were looking for a theme song, and it was chosen out of that group. And that's kind of how I got involved. If anyone doesn't know, along the way, I just kind of started listening to the show because of that being where our song was. Then came to be the person helping with the discussion board and answering phones and that. And now, as Jan has retired, I've taken over and found that my purpose for Monday is to be on the air. So I am very, very appreciative of that and am loving every minute of it. So I thank you for being part of our show. Also, I would like to let you know, if you want to call in and talk to our guest, you can do so by calling 347 205 347-205-9074. That phone number, 347-205-9074. And you can get to us if you want to be on the air, both through that phone number and also through Skype. And on those numbers, you would just press 1 so that I know that you are wanting to talk to us. So what I will do is bring on the air Jenny at this point and say, hello, Jenny Robertson. Welcome to Pure Talk Radio.
Hello, Cindy Freeman. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, and hopefully we figured out the sound issues. We were having some problems with it earlier, and I don't know if it's any better or if it's just going to be a Skype issue today.
Well, I'm hearing a little cutting in and out and a little garbling, but not consistently. I don't know if you're hearing me okay.
Yeah, I'm hearing you at this point, and occasionally we do have some issues with Blog Talk and Skype. I've rebooted the computer and done all that and shut down everything that's not essential, but, you know, it just doesn't always work the way we want it to.
No, we're always at the mercy of technology, whether we like it or not. So.
Exactly. So some days it's a good thing and some days it's not. And, you know, just like social media is, which we'll be talking to you a little bit about, as I know you've started a fairly new Facebook group on social media. And, you know, so it's always something different for us to look at and what we do with life in general, I guess, and how things are handled. So what I would like to do is tell the listeners a little bit about you and then have you tell us about your mission and what you're doing in life. So Jenny Robertson is the president of Jenny Robertson LLC. It's an organization that connects women around the world to their gifts, their purpose, and to each other. She facilitates workshops, speaks to large numbers of women's groups throughout the year. In 2000, Jenny founded On Purpose Networking for Women, and right now there's 7 meetings each month in various Maryland venues, as well as hoping to expand around the United States. She's also the founder, publisher, and editor of On Purpose Woman magazine, and that's a free publication that's distributed in Maryland. I believe that's a hard copy in Maryland, and then also online. Designed to assist women in leading richer, fuller lives, the magazine has been in circulation since 2003. Jenny is a contributing editor to 2 anthologies. The first one, The Spirit of Women Entrepreneurs, Real Life Stories of Determination, Growth, and Prosperity. And the other, Conscious Choices, An Evolutionary Women's Guide to Life. And then for 3 years, she was a co-host of her own show. Would be your own if you're co-hosting it, right? called Woman Talk Live Radio, and it was on 680 WCBM. In 2012, Jenny was named one of Maryland's top 100 women by the Daily Record. And so she also runs the Facebook group On Purpose Networking for Women, which is how I've initially become associated with Jenny. She's also started a new Facebook called On Purpose Social Media. And she'll be talking a little bit about how all that came to be. And, you know, like I said, networking has been a big part of her life, and it's been great to be able to connect with her, well, probably maybe 3 years already on that. It's been nice to see how Facebook has, again, connected me with people. So welcome officially again, Jenny. Thank you for being here. Did I lose you? Okay, well now, I have to find out what happened to our guest. And hopefully I didn't lose everything in this process. Are you there, Jenny? I don't know if I'm being heard at this point, or maybe Jenny went on mute. I will... looks like she's calling in a second time somehow. So I will pick up this line right here and say, Jenny, are you on this line?
Yes. Are you there?
Yes, looks like I've got you on two different lines.
Yes, I couldn't hear anything. You went totally dead, and I waited, and then I called back in.
Wow.
So I have no idea what you said for the last 3 minutes.
Well, I introduced you based on your bio, and I hope other people, if anybody's on the chat, in the chat rooms or anywhere, I would appreciate knowing if there was anything actually there. So whether I have to redo the introduction. But in the meantime, I'm going to presume that it did go out on the air.
Okay.
And that, you know, the bio that you read to me, I said, basically the end of it was that, you know, we initially had met through Facebook and through the networking, and you have been an absolutely wonderful networker, both on social media and on in real life, with being able to have your on-purpose networking for women group. Now, I want to clarify for folks that are out there, you do mostly work with women, but also that, you know, the suggestions and what we have to talk about today does also relate to men. So
yes.
Hopefully then that means, you know, people will pick up on that. So, okay. Would you like to tell us, first of all, the same question that I ask all of our guests, how did you come to know that what you are doing now is your purpose for life?
I love talking about this, so thank you for asking. I always tell people that I'm a recovering good girl. So as a child and as a teenager and as a young adult, I did what was expected of me. I kind of learned the rules. I got good grades because that's what good girls did, and I did what I was told. My parents chose my college. They chose my major. I got married. I started a career. I did all the right things. And I even did what I was told within my career. You know, someone would suggest that I move to another department or I take a promotion. And I would always say yes, rather than thinking, is this right for me? I liken it to being kind of like a leaf that's blowing around in the wind with no control, just going wherever the wind took me. But it was all very unconscious. I didn't know there was another way to do it. And so in my early 30s, my marriage just started to go south, and I made a very bold decision to leave my marriage, which wasn't something that people did in my family. And that's when I also started doing some work on myself. And the kind of turning point for me was I had this wonderful therapist, and my first day there, I told her, I was in my early 30s at the time, and I told her that I was doing things in my life, in my marriage, that I really didn't like about me. And I wanted, you know, I just didn't like it. And she leaned across her desk and she whispered to me, "Well, you know what, Jenny? You don't have to do it that way anymore." And Cindy, it was new information for me. That seems very strange to some people now, probably. But at that time, I didn't know I could change. And it was like the shutter opened, a little bit of light got in, and I said to her, "I don't. I can change this." And, you know, there's good news and bad news about knowing new information. The good news is once you know it, you know it. And the bad news is once you know it, you know it. I couldn't not know that now. So this started me down a path of seeking, looking at myself, looking at what I wanted for my life, kind of discovering who I was for the first time. And then at 40, something big happened, and I decided that the next 40 years were going to be very different, and I left my very lucrative career to go work for a seminar company I'd been a very happy client of. This was a complete career change for me. I took a very large pay cut to do it. I was a single mom at the time, so it was very scary, but I just did it because I knew I had to. I really didn't know enough yet about life purpose to know that I was following that. I mean, I think on an unconscious level, I was just listening to myself, but I hadn't really done a lot of work yet on this whole idea of purpose. And for me, and I think for some other people out there, when I heard about life purpose, it seemed really big to me, like that if to discover my purpose, you know, once I discover it, it better be something huge, like ending world hunger. You know, otherwise, what was the point? And I think that some people still feel that, and I think that gets in their way sometimes of thinking that, you know, sometimes your purpose in life can just be to be a good person and to affect one other person. You don't have to affect everyone in the world, because obviously we can't do that. And so I started to look at this idea and realize that I was following my heart, and not sure what that even meant, but I was just listening to my gut and going where I was making, I was still going where I was led, but I was making conscious choices for what I felt like was the first time. Leaving my marriage was the first real conscious choice I think I had made, and then leaving my career was a second big conscious choice. And so what I started to realize is that I had gifts that I'd never used before. I had talents I didn't know I had. I learned that I loved to be in front of the room facilitating processes and speaking, had avoided that for the first 35 years of my life. The main thing, though, that I realized is that there were things I loved to do as a little girl. And when I talk to people about purpose, I always tell them that, you know, look back to those things that you loved to do as a child, and you're probably not doing some of them now. I think those things are directly tied into our purpose. One of the things I loved to do as a child is I loved to start clubs so I could be the president. And in the 50s, I could get little girls to come into my bedroom and give me 10 cents for a club meeting. And then I would usually get a little bossy, and the club would end, and then I would start another one, and I could get them to come back. And, you know, I had all kinds of clubs. But the common thing there is that I loved the connection that I had with my friends. I also loved the organizing of the group and the running of the group. Well, that is so tied in to what I'm doing today. And so along the way, I discovered that I feel like my true purpose in being here is to connect women. It's the mission of my company, and it's also my purpose, which is to connect women around the world to their gifts, their purpose, and each other. And when you look at everything that I do, it all falls under that. If it doesn't, I don't do it. Those are the cliff notes.
Okay. You know, we heard the same thing last week. We heard the same thing from Krista when she said, you know, go back to look at what you loved doing as a child. And it's interesting how many of us have, quote-unquote, had to change those things for whatever reason, whether it be, you know, money, parents, family, getting a marriage, getting away from life, whatever. And, you know, obviously as a child that wasn't the reason, but ultimately as we grew up, you know, and forget those things. So how do we come back to, you know, you said do what you love as a child. How do you suggest anybody to remember and bring that back to their mind so that they can follow it?
Well, the first step, I think, is to get quiet. And I think that seems like a simple statement, but so often we are so busy, we are so bombarded with information and technology and busyness and noise. And just to simply sit and give yourself some time to get quiet and ask yourself some questions. And one of those questions is, what are some of the things I love to do as a child? And just start writing them down. Don't judge them. Just write them down. Just make a list. And then go back and read them and ask yourself, you know, which ones make me smile when I read it? Which ones make me feel joyful? Which ones light me up? And if I'm not doing them now, why not? And it doesn't mean that you have to necessarily be earning a living from them, but you better be doing them, because I think to the extent that we're not doing some of those things, our life is not as fulfilled as it can be. But I think the key here is to, you know, to listen to our higher wisdom, to listen to ourselves, and we just so often don't take the time to do that. And it seems like a very simple thing, but it's not necessarily easy. You know, I have women tell me that, you know, they can't fit 5 minutes in their day to sit quietly. And my answer is, well, then you don't know what your priorities are. You don't know what's most important to you. Because can you imagine? See, I can't imagine living a life where I don't have 5 minutes to sit quietly, because that's really important to me. So I think we just first have to know, well, what do we need? What's important to us? And we can't know that unless we ask and then listen.
And, you know, and reading the list that I did, people would presume, at least I would presume, and all the stuff that I've seen, I see you regularly posting on Facebook, having discussions with people. You run the organization. You have the meetings. you know, and I would think that generally you're a very busy person. It's interesting to hear
I'm
you
a very
say,
busy person.
You know, that you wouldn't survive essentially without those at least five minutes. So do you schedule that for yourself, or do you just allow it to happen, or how do you make that part of your life?
I have to be very vigilant with it, and I will tell you that it's an ongoing process for me. I can get into the flow at times and just automatically do it, and then there are other times that I'll realize, wow, I haven't been in my chair today. I have this chair in my office that I sit in the morning, and I like to take an hour. I don't take 5 minutes. I like to take an hour and do things while I'm in that chair. I do my planning. I do my gratitude journal. I set my intention for the day. And then I go to my to-do list, and I start, you know, figuring out how am I going to do my day. But I remember last year I'd gotten really off track with this, and I realized that I was getting up in the morning, and I was walking across the hall to my office, and I was turning on my computer without even thinking about sitting in my chair. So it wasn't like I was deciding not to. It wasn't even on my radar. And once I realized I was doing that, I just took a sticky note and put stop on my computer screen. So that when in the morning when I came in, I saw that stop, and it said, stop, don't turn your computer on. And it reminded me. Sometimes we have to be reminded. We have to exercise that muscle of memory and what's important to us. And so just like other people out there, you know, I have to consistently be vigilant about doing this. What I know for sure is that when I do, my life just works better. And when I don't, I get off kilter. And that's just the truth for me. So we have to make it important. We have to build it in. We have to make time for it. And we have to be conscious about it. And I think that's probably the bigger issue is that we do so many things unconsciously. We're just reacting. We're just, you know, doing the to-do list. We're just marking off the stuff. We're just reacting to the next deadline, to the next person who wants something from us. And we need to step back and say, what do I want? How is this feeding me? And I think to go back to the life purpose piece is once we know what our gifts are, once we know at least a little bit what we're here to do and how we're here to serve, we can start to make better decisions about how we spend our time and what we say yes to. And I can say more about that a little bit later if you want.
Okay, sure. You can either do that now or do that later.
Well, I can. I can do it now. From a business tool perspective, because that is what we're talking about today, I get offered a lot of opportunities, if you can imagine. I have a lot of people who know a lot of people who are in direct sales businesses. They want me in their downline. I know a lot of people. And there are a lot of products out there that I value and that I buy and use. But I know that I will never sell one of them. And I don't care how much money I can make. I just know that to take that step will take me in a different direction from where I want to go. So anytime I'm offered an amazing opportunity, I have to step back and say, is this leading me closer to my purpose, or is it taking me further away from it? And it has to be really in line. It has to be in alignment with who I am and what's important to me. It has to be in alignment with my values and all of those things for me to say yes to it. Because I look back for a number of years, I had a list of probably 20 people that I had collaborated with. This was probably starting in the 80s, and I had jumped on the bandwagon with them to do certain things. And what I realized is I was jumping on their bandwagon because I didn't have my own. I didn't think I could do it by myself, and it just didn't quite work out well. And then there are other times that I chase just the money. And I'm a big fan of money. I think we need to earn good money. I think we need to be paid what we're worth because we can do great things with it out there in the world. But any time I have ever just chased the money, I have managed to either sabotage it or it will just fall apart on its own. It will totally disintegrate. Or some piece of information will come to light and I'll go, what was I thinking? And the truth is I wasn't thinking. I was just looking at that bottom line and saying, oh, I can make a lot of money doing that. I've gotten into some partnerships over the years that have not served me because I was looking at it from that perspective. So now, and probably for the last 15 years, I've been in this position where if something comes my way, I do collaborate on occasion, but it has to be something that is in alignment and will serve me serving others. You know, even something as simple as saying yes to a radio show interview you know, your radio show is so in line with what I do that it was an automatic, yes, I would love to be on your show. But there are other shows that I have said no to because my audience isn't there. It doesn't flow with what I'm doing, and I won't do it just to say I'm on the radio. Does that make sense?
Definitely, and I appreciate, you know, that I'm glad to hear that because, yes, again, we have aligned on different things just with the chats and things like that with purpose. And, yeah, just because the word purpose is there doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that is an alignment. And I've seen some magazines and some other groups the same thing. I look at it and go, wow, oh, I should be in more things to get the word out about the radio show. And doesn't happen. Or should I share even your group to some other groups? It's like, not necessarily, because you're right, they don't align with that, or they turn out to be, and there's nothing wrong with it, a multi-level marketing type tool. And, you know, they've got a different mission, and that's fine.
Right. Yes.
So, it's been kind of interesting.
Well, I think what happens is that we go into fear, and we think we have to sell to everybody. We think everybody is our client. You know, I remember when I started out, you know, people would ask me, well, who's your ideal client? And I would say, women, women who are breathing. And that's not true. You know, there are certain types of women who are better suited to what I have, what I offer. There are certain types of women who will be drawn to what I do. So why would I spend time and energy marketing to groups of women that historically it has proven do not? But I think when we are in fear about, you know, getting clients, getting money, we think that everybody out there is a potential client. And then we kind of dilute our resources. We dilute our energy. We don't have a plan. We're just out there throwing stuff out and hoping that something sticks. And that's also very frustrating, and I don't think gets us very great results.
Okay. And that's, yeah, I agree with you. So let's talk a little bit about the how you came to create On Purpose Networking.
Well, On Purpose Networking will celebrate our 14-year anniversary in March. And in 1998, I was fortunate enough to be hired. I had the seminar company I'd gone to work for had left the area. I knew I could not go back to my career. My background is actually in corporate finance. I didn't mention that. And I was fortunate enough to be hired for 6 months by a group called the Whole Life Expo, which did these big holistic events all over the country. And they were doing their first event in Baltimore. So they came in and they hired me to do all kinds of things for them. And I had a wonderful time. And there were some really big names here. It was at the convention center. There were, I think, 150 speakers and over 250 exhibitors. And we had big names like Wayne Dyer and Marianne Williamson. And it was huge. It's a big 3-day event. And the next year, they hired me to actually put on the event. So I had a 6-month contract with them. And that was the last time they did the Baltimore program. In fact, they folded just a little bit after that. But I had such a great time. But what really happened is I met some of the greatest women during that process. So when the 1999 Whole Life Expo was over, I decided to throw a party at my house. And this is really before everybody was using the internet. So I sent out handwritten invitations to a lot of women. And the idea was, I know a lot of cool women. I think you know a lot of cool women. Bring them. Let's have this gathering on Saturday at my house. Bring food. And I called it a girlfriend party. And I thought, well, I'll do this every year. I like ritual. This will be kind of a cool thing to do. And it was a very interesting day. 65 women crowded my family room that first one. And they told me that I couldn't wait to do another one. I had to do it, you know, then. I couldn't wait a year to do another one. And so I decided to do it every quarter. And so I did 4 of those meetings at my house. And I noticed 2 really, really important things. I noticed that women were connecting in a way that I had never done before, not in my corporate environment especially. They were talking about things that mattered. They were showing what seemed to be their authentic selves. They were sharing in a way that was really compelling. And I really didn't know what networking was. I thought this was some other thing that we were doing, because my networking had always been, you know, for the corporation I work for, just go out and throw some business cards around, and that's networking. But the women in my family room were really connecting, and I like that a lot. The other thing that I observed I didn't like so much, and during the course of the afternoon, I would give everyone a chance to stand up and say a few words about themselves. And what I discovered is there were women who had such a hard time doing that. They were good at what they did. Some of them had businesses. They may not be able to talk about it. They couldn't make eye contact. They couldn't use their big voice and be heard. And it just saddened me that some of these women were just having such a difficult time showing up in the world. So after that fourth meeting, I had this idea. Well, what would happen if I took this out of my house, created an organization, and gave women a place to show up and practice being who they really are? And I did my first meeting a couple of months after that, and here we are 14 years later. On Purpose Networking for Women was born, and it has kept true to its mission the entire time. It has. We are now in 8 different locations in Maryland, and I just feel so blessed that I get to do this and I get to be with these amazing women every month. And again, absolutely living what I believe is my purpose.
So, okay, you have this, and what happens at your meetings then? That, how is this different from, I guess I have to compare them, you know, like a business networking meeting or a Toastmasters or a, mm-hmm. what? How do you help these women find their big voice?
Well, there's an opportunity for everyone to stand up and do a 30-second introduction, and the women are timed so they get to practice saying what they need to say, because what I believe is that people stop listening after 30 seconds, so it's nice to get that message down. But the main thing is they get to come and practice in a very loving environment. These are women who really want each other to do well. These are powerful women. In many cases, in most cases, who are really, you know, on track with what they're doing. But there's also room for the women who are in that transitional place and they're seeking and they're looking for something else and they don't know what it is and they need that support of other women or just to see other women taking the risks. So we show up, we network for a period of time, half an hour or so. We have a formal meeting where everyone gets to introduce themselves. There's also a featured member benefit where 3 different members get an opportunity to do a 5-minute presentation, which gives them more opportunity to hone their skills and share what they do. And then there's usually a speaker for 15 or 20 minutes on some aspect of business or personal growth that the women can then, you know, learn more from. And that format has stayed the same for 14 years because it works. It seems to work, and the women seem to love it. But the thing that I hear over and over again is just the quality of women who attend. And you know, they're just women who are willing to take risks, women who are willing to be seen, women who are willing to just step out there and also want other women to do well. Because that's something that for me was lacking. And, you know, I'm 62 years old, and so I have a bit of a history with the glass ceiling and, you know, coming up through the corporate arena. And women, at one point, we weren't playing real well together. And I liken that to, you know, I didn't learn to play on a sports team with other women. We didn't have sports growing up for women. And we didn't learn how to compete in a friendly way, you know, and lose and then still be friends later like men learn to do. And so I don't think we had any rules for that. And so some of my experience of women in the corporate arena was just not positive. And yet I think as women we are kind of wired to be helpful, to want to connect, to want to know the bigger reason, not just what you do, but why do you do it, and, you know, what part of you loves it. And I just think this is a place where women get to do that. Hope that answers your question.
Yep, and the reason I'm asking, and then maybe catching you off guard a little bit here, because we had not talked about this, you're saying that you want to expand into other states. Are you looking to collaborate with other women who might be interested in jumping off of what you've done? Are the people moving out of the state of Maryland where you are that are, you know, looking to do this? Or how are you looking to expand that now as you see on the step of your own purpose?
That's a really great question, because I have said I wanted to expand for almost 14 years. And what I tried here in Maryland was to have a couple of different women start groups of their own locally. And what then happened is people were going, well, why aren't you there? We want to see you. And so I realized that I couldn't be the figure here and not show up at some of the meetings. But as far as the national piece, you know, I keep saying I want to grow this nationally, and yet I really haven't figured out yet how to do that. And, you know, I have to find just that right person. This isn't something that you put a job description in for or an ad in the paper. This is someone, I believe, who already has a business that's going well, and they just want to add to that a bit. You know, this is not a business opportunity that would sustain someone financially, but it could certainly supplement. And I just really, to be quite frank with you, Cindy, haven't put the time or energy into it. I'm currently working on something which I can't really talk about right now that is going to, I think, jog that process a little bit. So I will put it out there. If this speaks to anyone and they want to talk further with me, I would love to entertain that possibility. But it's a great question, and I used to say that it had been on the back burner for a number of years, but now I'm just honest and say it never even made it to the stove. It's still in my head for the most part. But yet I think there's a possibility there, because I also, you know, if I'm going to reach women around the world, I'd like to do it not just on Facebook. I'd like to do it in another way also.
Right. Because, yeah, you do have – what is the percentage of your group that – of your Facebook group that is right there in Maryland with you and not? Do you have any idea at this point? I mean, that are really active. I know you've got, you know, a lot of members there, but that are really active.
Yes. I really don't know. I know I have, I think, 4,500 or so members on Facebook, and locally we have just a little over 300 dues-paying members. And probably out of those 300 or so, there are probably 150 to 200 who, you know, show up in the Facebook group. And I love now that I've taken the banner down for a while and I see photos, because that just tells me, oh, somebody was here and liked something, but they didn't say anything. And that kind of, you know, shows me who's coming on and lurking around a little bit and just liking some things. And so I think it is a place for local women to connect and to sort of see each other in between meetings, which is really important, you know, to remind ourselves who we are. There's been some collaborations that have come about from local members who had never met, yet they connected in that group and have decided to do some things together. So, but as far as the percentage, I think it's probably a very small percentage of who are actually, you know, if you look at the total number. And obviously those 4,500 or so women are not all, you know, connecting on Facebook. They're just there, but there are a number of them who really do show up on a daily basis.
Okay. And you've gone from, now you have the networking group, you've now also got a magazine. And
yes, I do. Go ahead.
Yeah, and there's, you know, incorporate the members, or is that beyond this as well?
It is beyond. You've probably done those workshops over the years where you were to write down 100 things you wanted to do. And on my 100 things back in the 70s, I remember writing down, I want to do a magazine. And I also remember in the 70s researching magazine production. And back then there really weren't that many free publications like mine. And the information I got in, I think it was 1975, said that if you want to start a national magazine, I think they were looking at something like Cosmopolitan, you need $250,000. And in 1975 dollars, that was a lot more money. And I decided that I would rather own a beach house if I had that kind of money than have a magazine. But somewhere in the back of my mind, I always wanted to do it. So this opportunity came about for me to write a column for a local magazine like the one I wanted to do. And then 10 years ago, we put out our first issue. My son just happened to marry a young woman who was a graphic designer and knew how to put it together. They're no longer together, but she's still doing my magazine for me. And I was successful with the very first issue because my network was in place already. I had members who took out ads and didn't even know what the magazine was going to look like. They just trusted and supported me in that. So while there are a lot of members who advertise, it is a kind of a statewide magazine. I'm only distributed in places where I have meetings, so in the counties where I have meetings, but we print 17,000 copies and distribute them around the area. So it does go much wider than just the membership. And as I think I said this, we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary this next issue, so I'm very, very excited about staying in print because so many print publications are going by the wayside.
Wow. Okay, you just dug my thing here and made a point for me. Many of the listeners know that last July, well, even before that, I had put out that I was starting a positive news magazine, and you know that as well, so I'm not, you know, walking over any toes or any of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and kept saying that originally when I first put that out there, it was like, oh, it was my dream also, as you know, when I was in journalism, because bad news sells and I didn't want that anymore and that kind of thing. So I wanted something positive. And it was like looking at that money and going, oh, that's not going to happen. But I hear you say now, you know, having that network in place. And the funny thing is when this opportunity to do the radio show came up, I'm like, oh, but I'm supposed to be starting a magazine. Well, you know, you just told me that my network really wasn't in place. You know, as I'm hearing you talk about this, like, yeah, you know what? I'm getting more of an opportunity to have my network in place by doing the radio show before I try doing the magazine, even though I'm only going to do it at the moment, I think, digitally, because it still costs. So, you know, you've even just taught me something here, you know, and I hope other people are learning some things from what you're saying about picking and finding their own purpose and then moving beyond.
Thank you. And I want to add to that, I'll often have women call me and they'll say, you know, I just lost my job. I need to network. And I so want to say to them, but I don't. I'm kinder. I want to say to them, wow, you needed to network a couple of years ago, because you don't start creating a network when you need it. You create a network for when you need it. And you also have to nurture your network. You can't just have a network that you take from. You have to give back. You have to promote other people. You have to connect. You have to be interested in what other people are doing. And I think that's where we sometimes fall down in that. We just see, you know, you know from the group on Facebook that I'm very adamant about people just coming on and doing their business promotions, because that's not the purpose of that group. And I will remove them, and I will eventually just remove them from the group if they don't cooperate. Because otherwise, the women who want what I offer won't come on there, because it's now a billboard for ads. And so I think that we have to learn that we can't just keep shoving stuff out there at people. We have to give back. And we don't give it so we'll get it. We just give it as a natural part of our day and as a natural part of our life. And it becomes kind of second nature, you know, to always be kind of looking at, you know, wow, who do I know that can help her? What can I do that can help that? I believe in her. How can I, you know, shine some light on her? And boy, it really, it feels good, and it really does circle around. You know, we can't keep score. We can't, oh, I gave somebody a referral and she hasn't done anything for me. Well, you'll get that from somebody else. You know, it just kind of all cycles around. So I think so much of this is just based on fear, and I know that's a whole other, you know, radio show, but we just get fearful about getting ours, and so that makes us not so generous sometimes. So I just suggest that, you know, again, when we're living our purpose, that fear is not raising its ugly head like it would if we were kind of swimming upstream. Because, Cindy, what I've also learned is that if something's really hard, I don't think I need to be doing it. It means I'm not in the flow. It means if I'm banging my head against the wall trying to make something happen with my business, then it's not for me. Now, I have to be really honest with myself. I can't just arbitrarily, oh, well, you know, this isn't for me. I have to really look deep and go, you know, why is this so hard? Well, and I can get to that place that says, you know, I'm really not supposed to be doing it. The people aren't showing up. I'm not liking it. It's not going well. But there's this mentality that we have that says, wow, I started this. I better finish it, or I can't fail at this. You know, and it's just information. Wow, that didn't work. Let me move on to something else now. That was more of an answer than you asked for, but I hope it helped.
Oh, that's okay. You just got me again. But that's okay. That's what I'm doing with my school right now. It's like I started this how many years ago? I need to finish it. Mm-hmm. But it would be the same thing right now. That's my purpose, and I'm reexamining it. And
that's good for you.
Saying, well, if not this, then what? Back again to looking at what feels good and what doesn't of what I've been doing. You know, how much of a struggle is it or how not. So, yeah. You know, that's what I'm hearing from you. Look, again, look at that list. You know, go back to that list.
Yes.
And say, you know, is this in alignment with those things that I enjoy? So, I'm going to jump back just a little bit on that, because we did have someone in the chat room ask a question, and I'd like to, I think this would be a good time to put it in. And this came from a learner in the chat room. She said, I find it confusing to tell which among my many interests and tempting projects are the one or the one that I should choose. And how do you tell what should be your alignment yardstick or your core?
Okay, that's a great question, isn't it, as I stall for time to think of something. Well, it's one of those people who have, and I'm glad the person brought that up, because I wanted to say a little bit about those of us who are big idea people. And I am a very, you know, what I call horizontal thinker. I'm married to a very vertical thinker, so we do pretty well together. He covers the nitty-gritty, the details, and I can see the big picture. But also I'm a right-brain person who lived in a left-brain world for so long that I can do both pretty well. But I have a zillion ideas every day. And, you know, the good news is I can usually act on the ones that I deem are important. But what I think I hear this person saying is, how do you know which ones are important? And how do you choose when you have all these different possibilities? Well, I think the first thing, again, is go back to that list. Make that list of, you know, what are the things I love to do as a child? What are some of the things I love to do now? How am I incorporating that into my life? What do people tell me I'm really good at? Like when someone says to me, oh, you are so good at that. I'm so grateful to you for that. What are some of those things? What are some of the things that we've gotten praise for over the years? And then we have to look at, you know, and how do I feel when I'm doing those things? What we have to work through are other people's opinions. And I always tell people I work with, be really careful who you share your purpose with or any dream or idea that you have until you are so solid in it that you can't be swayed. Because there are people out there, for whatever reason, who will tell you that it won't work. They will tell you how wrong it is. They will tell you that you can't make money doing it. And they are simply, I think, coming from one of two places. Fear, because they can't imagine doing what you're thinking of doing, or a little bit of jealousy, maybe. Well, how come you get to do it and I don't? I actually had people say that to me back in the day. Well, how come you get to quit your job and I don't? I found that really interesting. I didn't get to quit my job. I chose to quit my job. You have the same choice. But often we'll listen to those, all that noise out there that says, here's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to finish that degree, Cindy, right? You're supposed to finish that school, whatever it is you're doing. You're supposed to finish it because you started it. You better finish it. Well, who made up that rule? It's not my rule. It's somebody else's rule. So when we start to look at all those things that we have out there that we think we want to do, we first need to take out the ones that are somebody else's idea, that somebody else told us we would be good at, that somebody else told us we should be doing. Or, you know, you will sometimes hear also, well, you're not even using all that education you have. Well, like education is ever wasted. You know, I'm always using it, but I may not just be using it the way they think I should be using it. When I left my corporate job, people in my family and also a lot of my friends in the industry thought I had lost my mind because, you know, we were identified by the business card and the title. That's who I was, what I did, that vice president. You know, that was me. And it wasn't me. So I think I kind of went astray on that question a little bit, but I think, you know, self-honesty and, again, just getting quiet and looking at, okay, here's what my gifts are. Because I think we have these natural gifts that we aren't even aware of, like my ability to speak to groups and to really facilitate processes. I didn't know I could do that until I was given the opportunity. And it would have not been anything I had ever tried before or would have tried. I don't really consider myself a writer per se, but I can write. It's not one of my favorite things to do, but I can write, and I'm okay at it. But I never did that before either. And so look at the natural gifts that you have, because I think if you've got these ideas out there that you want to create, you've got to use your natural gifts to go after it. You shouldn't have to learn a whole lot of new stuff. You know, once you start to do it and get in the process, you can find people who can fill in those gaps. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but ask the person in the chat room if they have a follow-up question, if I actually answered their question, or you're probably looking at the question. You can tell me if I need to say anything else.
The response says it was very useful, so I guess you're good.
Okay.
Learner, if you have any other follow-up with that, feel free, or if anybody else does. Again, I'd like to invite people to call in, fill in the chat room. Phone number, 347-205-9074, 347-205-9074, or chat room on Blog Talk Radio, or the chat room on Facebook at Purpose Talk Radio Conversations. And I'm trying to jump back and forth and do my multitasking and catching everybody on both. That's something I love doing. It's like, sit still, yep, I'm hearing you, and great, putting it in the chat room. So, that's good. So, boy, I don't know. Were there some other things you wanted to talk to about your groups or what you're doing at this point? Otherwise, I can go some other questions that you that we might have here.
Well, I would just like to add something that I don't think I've mentioned yet, not about the group, but about what we're talking about, this whole life purpose thing, and another reason why I think it's so important to know it. You know, I talked a bit about, you know, how it helps us make business decisions about where to put our time, money, and energy, and it also helps us, those of us with the great ideas, knowing what our gifts are and how we're here to serve. And I think, though, that the more in line we are with our purpose and our gifts, the more we are likely to attract the people that we need to help us do it. I said something at a talk I did a while back, and I'd never said it before. It just kind of came out. I had those moments where I just said something. I kind of looked around to see who had said it, and it was like, wow, that was pretty brilliant. I didn't know I knew that. But it's this idea that if we're walking around with this sort of fake self that we're showing to the world, that we're showing our inauthentic self because of whatever reason, we're either fearful to be seen, or we don't know if people will like us, or we haven't even really figured out yet who we are, and we're wanting to attract like-minded people, we're going to attract the people attracted to the mask. We're going to attract people attracted to the false self. And I think that's why we get so frustrated out there sometimes, is that why did that person want to work with me? I don't even like that person. Well, it's because they're attracted to this persona that I'm giving out there. And so the more we can be true to ourselves and who we are and what we want and our authentic, to show up authentically in the world, the more likely we are to attract those people who want what we have, want to work with us, want to support us, and want to share us with everyone else. So it's that makes us kind of in this flow that, again, it doesn't have to be hard. We can be in this flow. And the more we are in alignment with all of that, the more we, again, flow, and it just becomes easier. And again, it's not supposed to be hard. We have to get over that whole idea that, you know, work is a struggle and we should have to work, you know, 100 hours a week, and we should have to bang our heads against the wall because, you know, anything worth having is worth working hard for. But you should at least enjoy it. I mean, I know there's been times that I've worked 100 hours a week, but I tell you, I've loved most of every minute of it because it's like, this is crazy, but I love it. But I also know I can't do that on a regular basis.
You know, we hear the saying, you know, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of people in one of the groups, actually I think it was Denise Michaels, said, you know, yeah, but I still have to be responsible for things such as returning phone calls and emails and those kinds of things. What do you think about that statement? Does it really resonate with you? Does it make sense? Or, you know, is that really an antiquated statement?
Well, I think it makes sense, but I think it also is taken out of context some. You have to define what work is for you first. And so I think the person who hears that and says, well, I still have to make phone calls, then they're hearing something else. They're hearing, if I do what I love, I never have to do things I don't want to do. And that isn't true. There will be things that you don't want to do. There will be things that you don't like to do. But until you can afford to have someone else do them, you have to do them. And so if returning the phone call is part of your business, is part of your life, is part of this passion and this energy that you have, then why wouldn't you want to do it? It's just another piece of the puzzle. So I think we have to define, what does that mean to me, work? You know, it's a word that I think has all these negative connotations. You know, I think what that quote is actually saying is, you know, if I do what I love, I never have to feel like I'm working again. I never have to feel like I've got that sort of tether around my neck of somebody telling me what to do. I love it when a woman will say to me, well, I want to start my own business, so I have all this free time, and my time is my own. And, you know, just laugh, because, yeah, I can take off most any afternoon I want and go to the movies with my husband, but I will often be sending emails at 3 a.m. So you get to pick, you know, the joy for me is I get to choose those times. I get to decide how I'm going to do my day unless I've got another, you know, a commitment that I've made. But I also don't say yes to anything I don't want to do. And I think that's a hard concept for some people to get. And again, I've been doing this for a while. I've been out on my own now for close to 20, a little over 20 years. So I've learned how to do a lot of this. But I still don't, you know, I have to look at it that everything I'm doing, I've chosen. So I can call it work, or I can call it, you know, I'm just living my purpose and doing my thing. So I think if we can get clear on the fact that, you know, those phone calls, I've chosen to be somewhere and doing something that people expect to call a call back. I've chosen that for myself. So now I can choose to answer the phone or not answer the phone call. I'm at choice with that, too. There are consequences if I don't. Rather than framing it as I have to do this, because then that feels like drudgery, that feels like work, and why on earth did you leave your well-paying, you know, paycheck every week to go do something you don't want to do? So I think it's about reframing and just really looking at words. I think words are very, very important in how we talk about what we do and how we kind of frame it all.
And that makes sense. It makes sense. You know,
I'm glad. Sometimes I get off on these things, and I don't know if I'm making any sense or not. It sounds like sense to me, but.
Well, I ask all of our guests to give me a favorite quote, and sometimes I share it, sometimes I don't. Sometimes it's just over on purpose.radio file for them. But the one that you gave me was by Oprah Winfrey: "The work of your life is to discover your purpose and get on with the business of living it." You know, and it's kind of similar to what you were just saying. You know, what's the purpose, and then what's part of the business, and how do you want to actually define business in relation to the purpose and living? I mean, it's like all those words can have a similar meaning. So,
I think so, and I think that where we sometimes get stopped is we think we have to figure it out. You know, we have to figure it all out first before we can take any action. And I think we can kind of do this simultaneously. We can start to get some ideas, and then we can start to try this. Okay, let me put my toe in the water and see how this feels. Let me go over here and see how this feels. Oops, that didn't work. Let me course correct and go over here. We have to be afraid to make mistakes. We have to be afraid to go down a path that isn't working, that ends up not working for us, because otherwise, how will we know? It's only through the process of a lot of elimination that I got clear of what it is I can say yes and no to. I had to, you know, make a lot of false starts before I got that. And I think the clearer we get, the earlier we get, the less false starts we have to do. But, you know, some of us get a little late start on that. And I'm just so happy when I meet a young woman who's, you know, in her 20s, and she's already going, you know, well, here's what I want, and I know I have to do this, and I'm not going to take that job because it doesn't feed me. And I'm like, really? Wow. How cool is that, that she knows that already, that she has a choice? Where, you know, a lot of my generation just, you know, we were the women who were going to do it all. We were going to, you know, set the corporate world on fire and be the amazing mothers and wives and everybody else out there and friends and just, you know, do all that was expected of us at that time. And so even if we wanted to say no to some of those opportunities, it wasn't okay to do that. So I just love that we have, you know, some younger women coming along who are, I think, looking at some of us who maybe sold our souls for a while there. And I also want to say that, you know, I also don't want people to think I'm saying that you have to go quit your job and start a business, because, you know, we actually need people staying in their jobs to do things that the rest of us aren't suited to do. You can live your life purpose with your work. You really ought to be living your life purpose with your work. Again, you may not be necessarily using it as income, but you can certainly use it on the job. You can certainly use it in your volunteer work. You can certainly use it with your family and friends once you get clear on what's important to you. And I think that's where we also, you know, we can use it the same way I use it to make business decisions. We use it to make career decisions. You know, is this job promotion, is this job transfer, is this new job that's dangling in front of me, is it really suited for me? is it really going to serve me? And that's a new perspective for some people, especially women. You know, we're not, for the most part, taught to put ourselves first and to think about what's in it for me first. But you know what they say, if mom is happy, everybody's happy, right? So we have to do a little bit more about making ourselves happy, because we really are the change agents out there right now, I think. So.
Okay, you know, we're talking about this purpose. So how do you specifically define living your purpose?
I have a really simple definition of purpose, actually. I define purpose as that which we are here to do. And I think that we can dumb it down to that level that says that's what I'm here to do. I think we can have more than one. I think we can have multiple purposes. We can have multiple gifts that we are sharing with the world. But I think there's an overarching kind of theme, if you will. Like, you know, within my purpose, within my mission of my company, there are some other levels of things, of gifts that I share. But they all kind of lead up to that one. You know, knowing what my purpose is, knowing what my mission is, everything that I do can fit under that umbrella. So I think it's just, you know, what am I here to do? I'm here to share this gift, this gift, this gift, this gift. I know I'm not here to teach algebra. I just know that, you know. I got really clear. I'm not here to run a corporate board. That's just not me. It's not my gift, but it is someone else's. Even though I like running things, I don't want to run that. And so wouldn't it be amazing if everybody on the planet was doing what they love? And I think there would be a niche for everybody. I think all the jobs would get filled. I think we'd all be, but we'd just all be really, really happy, wouldn't we? I know that sounds a little Pollyannish. I've been accused of that before, but, you know, I think Pollyanna kind of got a bad rap, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
That's for another discussion, but yes.
Yeah. Well, again, I think we all get our own bad reps once in a while, depending upon, you know, again, who we hang with, who we listen to, and all that. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, you said, do we listen to, and do we listen to what others say about us? Go back to that again. You know, Pollyanna had not listened, or, well, again, you know, characters, but, or had we not listened to what everybody else was saying, would that still be the case? You never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know. And it's hard, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. You know, I think it's Wayne Dyer who said we need to be independent of the good opinion of others. Well, that's just counterintuitive to what we've all been taught. But I think what he's really saying is we can't base our life decisions on what other people are going to think. And the deeper part of that is, as long as I'm being a good person, I'm not hurting anyone. You know, this isn't about being selfish and just being out there and doing whatever you feel like doing. It's like, wow, this is my life and it's important to me, so I better be in charge of it. Because if I'm not, nobody around me is going to be in a really good place. And I remember years ago, one of my mentors said that the best gift we can give our children is to live a rich, full life and to be an example of what that looks like. And a lot of us just didn't have that example. We may have had the example of a martyr, or, you know, someone who gave up things for us. At least they felt that way. Or people who put things on hold for other reasons. And so, if, you know, I want to be a model for that for other young women. I want other young women to be able to see, wow, I can do that. You don't have to wait till I'm 40 or 50 or 60 to take off and do what I want to do. But on the other hand, they may have parents who are saying, well, you've got to, you know, you went to college for that degree. You better use it. And yet every part of them is saying, I don't want to. It's not me. It's not who I am. And I think that the more we can value that with other people, the more we can also value it for ourselves.
Right. And I think, too, that people have to allow themselves the latitude to even say that at one time that was what was them. You know, you may have gone to school for accounting, and at that point in time, that was what you wanted to do and what you felt your purpose was, and maybe for that season or that time, they were able to do something in it, and now it's maybe music. I mean, they were worlds apart, and you never know. And I think a lot of it has to do with, too, the people we have associated ourselves with and what we've come to learn in life through the process of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with that. I was reading a blog the other day, and this woman was writing about how she had sat next to a woman she didn't know at a dinner party, and the woman was lamenting about having to go back to work on Monday. Now, the woman writing the blog is an entrepreneur, and she said that this woman was lamenting, oh, I have to go back to work on Monday. I hate my job. I hate my boss. And this woman was trying to just kind of talk her down a bit and saying, well, you know, what else would you like to do? Oh, I can't do anything else. I have to do this. And she said that they couldn't meet anywhere. She goes, as much as we were both kind of trying, we just couldn't get each other. She couldn't understand me, and I couldn't understand her. And I think that until we, you know, take the time to kind of step back and go, wow, you know, I'm really not supposed to be miserable. It's my birthright to be happy. And yet we've been given these rules that so many people are still holding on to very tightly of what it's supposed to look like. And what I believe is, as I said earlier, you know, education is never wasted. Relationships are never wasted. Everything that we have done in the past has brought us to where we are right now. So it is a true gift. If I hadn't taken that wrong path down there, I wouldn't have ended up here right now. If I hadn't had that marriage that didn't work, I wouldn't have this amazing child. I wouldn't have learned a lot about myself. I wouldn't have seen that therapist who told me I could change. You know, so I think we just have to look at all of those things as just processes, just steps that we took. And some of them felt good and some of them didn't. And when we tried something different, it might have worked, it might not have worked. But it's only the judgment that we place on it. And again, you know, other people are giving their advice and their criticism based on their own filter of how they view life. And it very often has absolutely, in fact, I think most often has nothing to do with us. It's really all about them. But if you value their opinion, it's really challenging sometimes. Sometimes you just have to kind of remove yourself from people for a bit until you get your sea legs and get really, really firm and clear on what it is that you're going after. Sometimes people will just self-select out of your life. I don't know if you've had that happen. You know, you change and people aren't real fond of the change, Cindy, so you don't have to do anything. They just kind of leave, you know. I had that experience when I had a few girlfriends who all we did was commiserate about our terrible ex-husbands. You know, that was our life. You know, we would go out and drink and commiserate about our ex-husbands. And when I started to get a little healthier, I realized I don't want to do that anymore. That's not fun and it's not good for me. And when I decided I didn't want to do that anymore, I didn't fit into their life anymore. And so they just let me go. And it was actually painful, but good for me, if that makes sense.
It does. And you know what? I'm going to give you a chance to breathe here.
Thank you.
because as you said that, of course, I was looking up a poem that it's got a little bit of a length to it, but it's not too bad. And it's something that I was thinking of. And it is, let's see, who originally did it? Brian Andrew Drew Chalker, called A Reason, A Season, or A Lifetime. And I think it's important to this, and I'll post a link to it in the chat room also. It says,
I know this poem. I think it's perfect. Thank you.
Yep. When someone is in your life for a reason, it is usually to meet a need you have expressed outwardly or inwardly. They have come to assist you through a difficulty, to provide you with guidance and support, to aid you physically, emotionally, or spiritually. They may seem like a godsend, and they are. They are there for the reason you need them to be. Then, without wrongdoing on your part or at an inconvenient time, this person will say or do something to bring the relationship to an end. Sometimes they die. Sometimes they walk away. Sometimes they act up or out and force you to take a stand. What we must realize is that our need has been met, our desire fulfilled. Their work is done. The prayer you sent up has been answered, and it is now time to move on. When people come into your life for a season, it is because your turn has come to share, grow, or learn. They may bring you an experience of peace or make you laugh. They may teach you something you have never done. They usually give you an unbelievable amount of joy. Believe it, it is real, but only for a season. I just slipped my thing. Lifetime relationships teach you lifetime lessons, those things you must build upon in order to have a solid emotional foundation. Your job is to accept the lesson, love the person or the people anyway, and put what you have learned to use in all other relationships and areas of your life. It is said that love is blind, but friendship is clairvoyant. And, of course, it ends because it's been sent around is to thank people for being a part of your life. So he's got a little more prayer to it. Made today, and I'm going to use this a little bit as our affirmation. It's jumping ahead on things. May today there be peace within you. May you trust God that you are exactly where you are meant to be. May you not forget the infinite possibilities that are born of faith. May you use those gifts that you have received and pass on the love been given to you. May you be content knowing that you are a child of God. Let his presence settle into your bones and allow your soul the freedom to sing, dance, and bask in the sun. It is there for each and every one of you. And as I say many times for people, if you don't want to use the word God, you want to use universe, spirit, whatever. I'm not, you know, laying claims on any specific words here. This is not a religious or anything else show, but it allows people to be open and receptive to all kinds of faiths, denominations, beliefs, racial, spiritual backgrounds, whatever. So I say that as I read that as well. So, yeah, that just came to mind, and that one's a little bit different, I think, than one of the other ones that I've seen. It fits just. So, thank you for.
And I think once we know that people do come into our lives, and you know, remember when I worked for the seminar company, we would tell people that, you know, when they went back into their lives, they may find that people were different, and some of it would be really positive because they were being different, then other people would be reacting differently to them. But sometimes people would, again, kind of self-select out of their lives, and like I said, and sometimes you just have to wish them well and let them go. And again, it's painful because we want to know the why. Well, what's wrong with that? You know, and it doesn't mean that we won't be hurt. It doesn't mean that we won't have some pain to work through. But sometimes people, we're just not supposed to be together anymore. And that could look like, you know, a committed relationship. It could look like a, you know, a job. It could look like people become estranged from family members for different reasons. But I think the whole key to this is to realize that it's all part of the process and to let go of any resentment that we may have about it or any anger or fear around it and just see it that everybody is, we're all working our process. And we all have to be, you know, open to whatever comes along as part of that. And, you know, the only time it won't work for me is if I'm wanting it to be different. You know, if I'm wanting them not to be who they are, them not to be, not to do what they did, to expect other people to follow my rules and to, you know, act according to my playbook when I haven't shared the book with them usually. And that was a real, you know, eye-opener for me when I remember the first time I read that. I think it's been around for quite some time, and I remember going, oh, wow. You know, there are people, and there's another one that talks about, you know, how there are people who have front row seats in your life, and there are people who are up in the balcony on the fringes, and that it's just okay. You know, but I think the key that we walk away from with what you read, Cindy, is just this idea that, you know, people come and go, and they've all been a blessing in one way or another, even though they may not look like it at the time. But in retrospect, if we're willing to look, we can usually figure out what it was and thank them for it, silently usually. I always tell people when you decide to forgive someone, you may not need to tell them because sometimes they don't know they need to be forgiven. It's all about you. So, you know, you don't even need to have that conversation.
Right, right. Yeah, we never know what's going to happen and we're going to meet and who we're going to talk to, too. You know, like I said, you know, it might be that person in the grocery store line, for all we know, that is going to give us just that nugget that we need for the day. You know, we could be watching, and we spoke about this again last week, too. It could be that child that's out there playing the ball that makes it, playing with the ball that makes us go, oh, wow, God, it's been so long. I wish I could just do that. Well, okay, yeah. Go ahead and do it. And don't care what everybody else has to say about it. You know, sometimes I want to just go play in a sandbox. You know? What are people going to think of me? Well, too bad, you know. So.
You remember years ago, I think it was maybe the mid-70s, then the book The Celestine Prophecy came out?
Yes.
Do you remember that book?
Yeah.
I remember, you know, it's a parable, really, and I remember reading it. Everybody was excited about it, and I remember it may have been more like the 80s. I don't know. But I remember reading it and thinking, I don't like how this book is just not well written. But the insights were amazing. And one of the insights has particularly stuck with me, and I mention it often in my work. And one of the insights was, or is, pay attention to the people, I'm paraphrasing a bit, but it's pay attention to the people whose path crosses yours. They are there for a reason, otherwise they would have taken a different road. And for me, that was all about consciously noticing who shows up. And again, it could be that one brief encounter in the grocery store. But we can't notice if we're not present. You know, and I haven't actually mentioned this whole idea of just being fully present. But it's, again, we can't be present if we don't know who we are, what we're about. You know, to be fully present, we have to be living in this authentic place, I believe. And so if I can show up fully present and be available, then it's amazing what shows up for me. I mean, I'll start a conversation with someone and have no idea where it's going. And next thing I know, we're talking about, you know, mutual friends and, oh, yeah, somebody told me that I needed to do this. And, you know, it's going down a path that I could have never predicted. But we have to also be willing to be seen. And we have to be willing to put ourselves out there and to be rejected and to be judged and all of those other things that don't feel good. But the other part of it feels so much better that usually it will kind of cancel that out, at least over time. That's the great thing about aging, too. You start to care much less about all that other stuff. Again, that's another phone conversation, isn't it?
There you go. Wow. I just looked up Celestine Prophecy and it said 1993. I'm like, I don't think so. No, it was not that late. So,
I don't think so, but it may have been.
I thought I was in college when that thing came out. I suppose it could have been after college, but yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's that recent to me. But although, you know, if
that's still 21 years ago.
Yeah, I guess it is.
May be. When I look at my life at that, yeah, it may very well have been then. So,
wow. Yeah, I thought it was further back, too. Anyway. So, I'm not sure where to go here with it. We went through pretty much how to discover your purpose. You know, you talked about the writing. I don't know if there's any more you wanted to add to further steps of how to create that process or discover the purpose. I think we pretty well covered it, but there's something else.
Yeah, I can add a little bit more to that, the whole idea of, you know, writing down those things that obviously that we love to do as children, and also to, you know, make a list, I think I mentioned this also, of our gifts, of what we think some of our gifts are, of what we like to do and what other people have told us we're good at. Now, again, just because somebody tells you you're good at something doesn't mean you want to spend a lifetime doing it if you don't like doing it. But sometimes there's a correlation there between, someone may say to you, oh, you're such a good listener. I know I can always talk to you. And if you like that about yourself, then maybe being a good listener is tied into your purpose in some way. And then I think you can take the key words that keep showing up, you know, the words that show up from your childhood, the words that show up from what you like to do, the words that show up from what people tell you they appreciate about you, and you can pull key words out and see what are the common themes here. And out of those common themes, you can start to develop what I call a purpose statement. This is kind of the work in progress of starting to develop your actual, the written version of your purpose. I think your written version of your purpose can be a very, you know, succinct one sentence, but, you know, in the beginning it could be a whole bunch of sentences. Just start writing. See what feels right. But the key is to look at the common words. What are the words that keep showing up? Wow, this word connection keeps showing up. That feels really good to me. So if connection is part of why I'm here, then how can I start doing that more in the world? And so, you know, once you start to see the key words and you start working on this purpose statement, which I believe is a work in progress, most of the time, you always want to revisit and make sure that you're still on track. Once you do that, then you can start to look for ways, like Oprah said, to live it out. Start to look at ways to give that gift more easily. And again, you don't necessarily have to be making money from that, though I really think the more that you can incorporate it into your money-making, the more effortless your money-making will be. But you don't have to, you know, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, but I want to make sure that people get that your primary job or your primary business does not have to center around your purpose. You know, it doesn't have to be the be-all there, but it needs to be incorporated into it, I believe, or the fulfillment just won't be there. And so just see what keeps showing up. You know, what do you feel good about? What do you, you know, if someone keeps telling you, wow, I love that those cookies that you make for me. They are so good, and you're always bringing cookies into the office, and you just, you know, you're so good about giving us cookies, and your cookies are fabulous. Well, you know, is there a cookie thing out there for you somewhere? But it's more than just the making of the cookies. Is what is it? What is the cookie making give you? You know, how are you feeling when you're making these cookies? What is it about giving these cookies to other people that feeds your soul? And that starts to give you more insight into who you are and what's important to you. It may actually have nothing to do with cookie making. Cookie making is just a strategy that you're using. Because here's what I also believe. I believe that we all have these gifts and we all have this purpose or purposes. And if we're not using them, we're going to, on an unconscious level, kind of get them anyway, but we may get them in a very unskillful way, or we may get them in even a destructive way. So let's say that that one of the things that I love is to be front and center. I love to be facilitating. I love to be speaking on stage. Now, when I was a little girl, I was what was called a show-off, and I would get, you know, told, one of the things my mother would say to me on a fairly regular basis is, "You're getting a little too big for your britches, young lady." Or, "Who do you think you are? Stop doing that. Stop showing off." And I realized at a very young age that I better stop doing that because I was going to get in trouble. And so as an adult, I could have, you know, seen this need that I have, this purpose that I have for, you know, being front and center and telling people what I know. And I could have done it in a very obnoxious, very show-offy kind of way, if you will, even in a rude way, just to get my needs met. And I think we sometimes do that if we're not conscious about it. I don't know if that makes sense or not, because I haven't talked about that in some time. This just kind of came out for me right now. But I think that that's why we need to know, you know, because we're going to go after it. And we can either go after it consciously or unconsciously. And that's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
For now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, again, and it's, you know, everything can be looked at, like you said, as a positive or a negative, depending upon what we do with it. You know, and it's, again, one of the things we looked at with Joe is finding the positive even in those negatives and in that journey, as you mentioned before, just because somebody's been, I don't know, smacked up against the wall and can't get the promotion and can't get the promotion at work or whatever, maybe that means the place isn't correct, but maybe that means that job isn't correct or those people are not who they're supposed to be associating with, or it may just mean not at the moment. You're not in the right place at the right time. And it takes a lot to try to figure out all those things, and sometimes people can get overwhelmed with trying to process too much too. And, you know, have to take the break. And I think that's the importance. Back to what you said at the very beginning, sit down and be quiet and listen for what does that internal part of you, that gut that really knows all this, tell you about these things when they happen.
Yes, because I think we do know. You know, we've got this wisdom. And, you know, I've seen people go to seminar after seminar, read every self-help book out there, and still be seeking because they've done the intellectual pieces of it. And they know the jargon, they know the keywords, they know what to say what they're doing, but they may not have ever taken that time to just sit quietly and say, what do I know for sure? What do I believe right now? Because also when we do that, we'll discover what we believe that doesn't serve us, because there are things that are running through our psyche that just does not serve us, and we need to know what those are too, because they're going to get in our way. They're going to keep us from having this more effortless flow of going after and living our purpose, because there's this little voice back there that's saying, oh, no, not you. You can't have that. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. Or you're too smart for this. You have all that education. What do you? And, you know, as long as that's going on, I don't care how much work we do. I don't care how hard we work. We're going to be swimming upstream, and we're probably not going to go after what it is that we want. We're not going to get there.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to read again. I want Lerner to call in. This is crazy. All right, Lerner, call in. But it was just put in here again. When Carl Jung made his break from Freud, he had sort of a breakdown. Of himself, he decided to go back to doing the things that he had enjoyed as a 5-year-old child. His idea was that that boy still lived with inside of him as an adult, and the adult Jung needed to know what the boy knew, basically, you know, some of what you're saying. And, you know, those are the most, some of the most famous psychological, so to speak, people that we think of when we think of how to process things. So even
yes.
they went through it. You know, come back to Michael Jordan failing how many times before he finally got his contract, you know, and how many times did it take, you know, Einstein to create all his stuff and all of these. I mean, there's a list of them out there,
mm-hmm.
both life and scriptures and all of that, that says how many times these people failed at what they were doing, but because they felt in their mind and in their heart, they were doing what they were meant to do. They kept going for it. And eventually it did, when the time came right, they found it. Wow.
And I think that's something that is so important to understand and to remember, because we, again, do live in this sort of instant gratification society that says, well, you know, I want that. I want it right now. And especially when, you know, everybody's talking about manifestation and, you know, if I just believe it and if I can see it, I can make it happen. I believe that, but you also have to do a whole lot of work. You can't just sit and meditate and make something happen. I don't believe that. I think you still have to go out there and do the footwork. Take the action steps that will keep you moving toward that. And I think that, you know, sometimes we just think it should be instant. We look at other people. And I think that's another reason why it's so important for us to be real with each other and to go out and show our real selves and our authentic selves, because otherwise we're all walking around thinking that everybody is doing it better than we are. That, oh, she's so good at that. That's just natural for her. Well, no, it isn't. You know, I've had women say to me, well, I could never do what you do. And I'm like, well, I'm really glad, because there's only one of me. You need to go be doing what you do. Don't try to emulate anyone else. You'll always fall short because of what you perceive them to be and who you perceive them to be. That's why we, you know, when we compare ourselves, we never measure up, because we're comparing to a false sense of who we think the other person is. We just have this idea about their life and their skills. And we go, well, I can never do that. Well, maybe you're not supposed to do that. You have to figure out what it is you're supposed to do. But that still stops people, because they want to do it perfectly. They don't want to make a mistake. They don't want to fail. They don't want to be ridiculed or talked about. And again, you know, failure is only determined by how you define it. You know, you just mentioned all those people who failed over and over and over again. And to me, you know, when something doesn't work out, it's just like, okay, what's next? I wasn't supposed to do that, apparently. But I haven't always been in that place. I, you know, took it really hard when things didn't work out, because I took it personally. It was like, there's a character flaw here somewhere. And again, that's just a societal thing that I think we've set out there, that, you know, we only do things that we're good at, and we only do things that we can do perfectly. And again, you know, everyone should know at least that there's no such thing as perfection. There's only a direction that we can take towards what it is that we want.
Right. As Yvette in the chat room said, when we compare ourselves to others, it steals our own joy. You know.
Yes, because again, we never measure up. And even if we compare ourselves to others and we think we're better than, and that does happen, you know, that's our ego trying to keep us, you know, well, okay, well, at least I'm better than you. You know, I can go on and watch an episode of Hoarders and go, well, at least I'm not doing that, you know. But that's, again, it's all false stuff. And, you know, our ego just shows up to kind of let us know that we're okay and we can keep doing what we're doing and we don't have to change. And yet we don't want to keep doing the same thing that we're doing. Our ego is there simply to keep us safe. And sometimes you have to get a little unsafe to make change. And I always say, if you're, you know, your ego's done a great job if you're still here. But we have to recognize when it's simply the ego talking, and not the higher self. You know, when is it about me and what I want and what I fear and what I'm afraid that's going to happen? And, you know, something happened to me a couple of weeks ago that was so unexpected, and something came from someone I barely knew, and it was a form of communication, and it just kind of knocked my legs out from under me. And for a minute I'm going, oh, gosh, I offended them, you know. And I noticed my heart was beating really fast, and I was breathing, and I was starting to doubt everything that I had done in, like, the last year. I don't know if you can relate to this. And, you know, the good news is I'm quicker about noticing when I'm doing it, and I can step back and breathe and go, okay, what's the truth here? That's always the thing I do to get me back on track. What is the truth? What do I know for sure? What are the facts? Not what I'm making up about the facts. What are the facts? The facts are I said this, she said that. Everything else I've made up. And yet, you know, I think it's a lifelong process, and I share that because I want everyone to know that, you know, this isn't something that we just fix and never address again. We have to keep addressing it. It just shows up again. The bigger risk we take, you know, we're taking another new risk, we're starting something new, there's more opportunity for, you know, the little poison arrows to be heading our way. You know, the bigger game you play, the bigger target you are sometimes for other people to criticize or judge. And just notice when you start to feel that and, you know, get a sense of where that's coming from. And I don't think you can ever go wrong by stepping back and asking yourself, you know, what are the facts? If I just deal on the facts right now, what are they? Because I am really good at making up stuff. You know, I can make up, well, Cindy said that. Oh, what did she mean? Oh, she must have meant that. You know, and we could just go crazy with that. And it's actually kind of amusing. So I can laugh at myself now and kind of go, well, there you go again, making up stuff. You're really good at that, Jenny. But maybe right now it's not serving you.
Right. Yeah, communication is the key to a lot of things. And that's why some of this electronic stuff that doesn't give us immediate feedback, not quite so good all the time. It gives you a chance to think about your words, but it doesn't necessarily give you a chance to respond if someone doesn't get your words the same way you really meant them.
So, exactly.
Those things. Again, we were talking about technology, a good or bad thing.
Yeah, there's no emotion there, and we are sometimes too quick to hit that button without stepping back and going, okay, is this really what I want to say here? Am I reacting or responding? And, you know, the technology piece is amazing when it works well for us, but sometimes it can get us a little bit of trouble. Because we just kind of lash out. You know, if you're lashing out face-to-face, you can have that conversation, but it's really kind of challenging to do back-to-back. So I think it's, again, and what I've also discovered, you know, when I talk about sticking to the facts, if I do need to respond to someone that I think has perceived something incorrectly from my perspective, then if I just deal with the facts, I don't have to get into personalities. I don't have to get into, you know, judging them or telling them what they did or didn't do. Here are the facts. I said this, you said this, here's what I'm, you know, this is maybe what I'm thinking about it, but I can't tell them what they've done because I'm usually wrong, you know, or we throw that thing out, oh, you really hurt me. Well, you know, you didn't hurt me, I just happened to feel hurt by what you said. So again, you know, it's all languaging and it's all paying attention to our sort of automatic responses and how we tend to kind of lash out when we're feeling backed in. And, you know, all this comes down to that whole thing again is when we're out there living our purpose and taking these steps, we really need to have people that we can rely on, people who have our back, people that we know, or that one good friend that we know we can go to and say, you know, here's what I want to do. And they will give you their honest answer. They have no agenda. They have no horse in the race, if you will. What you do will not change their life one way or another. Some people, you know, have an agenda. They don't want you to do certain things because it will affect them. So you need that one person you can really trust their opinion. You can go to that person and say, you know, am I crazy? You know, this just happened. Can you kind of talk me down on this? And, you know, you get to the habit of that, then you start to be able to do it more on your own. My husband's really good for that because he's one of those people that manages to take nothing personally. I don't know if that's just how he's hardwired or what. And so sometimes I'll go in and just say, I just want to tell you this. And then once I say it, I'm going to be done with it, I think. But, you know, so-and-so, listen to what they said to me. And then he'll say something back, and then I'll feel better because I said it to him. I don't need to say it to them probably.
Yeah. Yeah, we all do need that person. And even that, you know, finding that connection takes time and a process, too, because, again, where people are in their life. We're back to this poem. We're kind of doing a couple of circles here, which are great, bringing things back. You know, that person, again, might be the best person in the world for you where you are in the moment. And hopefully stay that way your whole life. But, you know, you may suddenly come on a different journey, or you're off another path and they may not be there for you. And you just got to, again, listen to your intuition, even with those people.
Yes.
So I like that, though. Okay, so we make the list, we look at it, we look for the keywords, we kind of craft our own mission and our personal mission statement. We might want to bounce it off of, you know, a key person, not the rest of the world, because not everybody's going to have our back. What would be the next step? Is there a next step to actually then get into that?
Yes, we have to obviously then, I think I mentioned this already, go out there and find ways that we can start to or continue to live it. And then just revisit it. We need to revisit it. One of the, I guess, let me go back and start at step one again, because I think I started step one with, because we were in the conversation about what are the things you love to do as a child. But there's a question you could ask yourself before that even, and that is, what kind of person am I, or what are some things that have been consistent and not changed since I was young? So what are not just what I did when I was young, but what are some ways that I've been in the world that have been consistent for me? In other words, maybe I've always been a compassionate child. Maybe I loved animals and was always the one who rescued the animals, or I was the one who, you know, kept the other child from being bullied, or just, you know, befriended the new kid in school. And maybe that's, you know, been consistent with me through my life. Maybe now I'm still doing this compassion thing. Well, that may be very well tied to my purpose. And then what do you most love doing in the work that you do? What are you passionate about? And how do you spend your free time? You know, when your free time is your own, when you can do anything out there that you want to do, how are you spending it? What are you good at? Because your purpose will also involve doing something that you love. If it doesn't, then I think you're kind of off track there. And then you might want to think also about some of the peak experiences of your life. You know, what are those times that you had the most joy and excitement? Times when it felt like you were just in the flow, and, you know, what was going on? What made it special? Because I think your purpose will also reflect those highlights of your life. And then if you start to look at all those things, like I said before, just look at all those things and see what the keywords are. What are the things that keep showing up? However you write the question, you're going to get some of the same answers. So those are real keys then, real clues to your purpose. And then that's when you can start to take the keywords, start to develop your purpose statement. And again, it's a work in progress, and you can add to it as you become clearer. And then find that one person that you can start to talk with about. I think it's great. You could have a purpose buddy. You could have, you know, another friend that you say, okay, we're going to work on this together. Because speaking it out loud to another person will also help bring it more into reality. It will, and plus you'll have their support as you move forward in that. I think we need to speak things out loud, not just so we have support from another person, but also because we need to hear it ourselves. We need to hear ourselves speak it. And then, again, the last thing is to find ways to incorporate your life's purpose into what you're doing. And my hunch is that most people are doing some of that. You might be surprised to look at your life and go, oh, wow, I've been doing that in my volunteer work. I've been doing that on the weekends. I've been doing a piece of that. And the key then is to just be more conscious about it, because a lot of it's just been unconscious. You just happen to do it. But start to be more conscious about it and work it into your daily life and work it into your plan. And when you're faced with an important choice, like I talked about earlier, ask yourself, you know, is this taking me toward my purpose, or is it taking me down another road that doesn't feel right to me right now? And Cindy, I do have this on a sheet. If anyone would like to email me, I'd be happy to send it to them. It's all written out, and they could use it as a template if they want.
Okay. And how do they get to you for that?
They can email Jenny Robertson, and it's GinnyRobertson at JennyRobertson.com. And just okay. Put life purpose in the subject line. That would be great.
Okay. And how else can people get a hold of you?
Well, my website is JennyRobertson.com. I'd love to connect with people on Facebook. It's Jenny Presley, like Elvis, Robertson. There's only one of me out there, I think. and also the On Purpose Networking for Women group. If any women would like to be part of that group, just put in On Purpose Networking for Women in Facebook. It is a closed group. They need to go in and then ask to join. And, you know, we also have this great On Purpose social media group that I started a few weeks ago. They could put that in also, On Purpose Social Media, it's called. And we're learning all kinds of new things about how to use social media in our businesses. And I also have On Purpose Woman Magazine. I have a business page for that, so they could put that in. And both there and in the On Purpose Networking group, they can also see a link to the current issue of the magazine, which they can then look at in a PDF if they're not local and can get a hard copy.
I'm sorry, Jeanette.
All of it. I'm also on Twitter and all those other things, but we can – I'm at Jenny Robertson is my Twitter name, and I'm on LinkedIn. They can find me there if they like.
Okay, so your email is jennyrobertson@jennyrobertson.com. Okay. All right, very good. Is there anything that we missed?
Well, I don't know. I think we covered a ton of stuff here.
And you were sure you could fill 2 hours. Guess what? We did.
Oh, wow. It's 20 of, isn't it? It sounded like we were kind of winding down around 4 o'clock. And I thought, well, maybe she's going to wrap this up now. But, boy, we got some more good stuff in. So I appreciate it. I like this. I've done many radio shows, and some of them are 20 minutes. And that's just really starting to get, you know, you're just starting to loosen up a little bit and getting in the flow. So this has been great.
Well, that's one of the things with Blog Talk Radio, too. Yes, people can have a free half-hour show, but, you know, it's much better if those of us that have shows can get sponsors or get people involved, because then we can have a longer show. So one of the reasons why I put out there that people are able to sponsor the show if they'd like as well.
I would also offer, if anyone wants to go on your conversations page, which I think is such a great idea, if anyone wants to go on that thread that you've started on the conversations page and ask any questions, I'll go check it out and be happy to respond to anyone there if they want. Or they can also email me and ask me if they have a more personal question.
Okay, and we have a phone call for you.
Oh, cool.
We have Lerner has decided to call in, which I am so glad. Welcome to the show, Lerner.
Well, thank you. This has been so helpful. I've really enjoyed the show a lot. And I think what
thank
I'd
you.
Like to add is sometimes it's hard for people to recognize their gifts. You know, I know a couple of people that have beautiful, natural singing voices, and because it's simple for them, they don't see it as anything important. So I guess I'd like to add the caution that sometimes your talent is staring you in the face because it's so easy for you that it doesn't really seem to be a talent. We tend to put effort and drudgery and strain and, you know, we tend to connect those things with achievement. But in fact, if you have something that is just so easy it doesn't seem important, that may well be your genius.
I think that is a really great point, and I fully agree with that. And I, you know, from my personal experience, for whatever reason, you know, I am just really, really good at events, at putting events together and getting people to show up and the aesthetic of the event and just kind of being able to make everything flow and be there. And other people have said to me, well, you make it look so easy. And it's almost been a criticism from some people. You make this look so easy. Like, you know, mm-hmm. How dare you make it look easy? And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I don't know how to make it look hard because it is easy for me. But it's mm-hmm. one of my gifts. Again, like I said earlier, my gift is not to teach algebra. I know my limitations there. And I think you're so right on with that sometimes we negate that as, you know, well, it's just easy for me, so therefore it's not important. It's supposed to be a struggle. I didn't work hard for this. It was just given to me. It was, I think our purpose comes from those things that were just given to us, that are natural for us. Again, I went to college,
sorry,
and
ahead.
I learned how to do a lot of that stuff. I learned how to, you know, how to do accounting, but I'm certainly not going to teach it. But I know how to do it because it's not mm-hmm. my gift.
I know that sometimes the gift hides itself. Like, I have an unusual ability. When you take those aptitude tests and you could, they have little paper patterns and you have to fold them up in your mind and then rotate them and answer questions about, you know, which side has the X on it and that kind of stuff. I'm just so good at that. But to me, it was just always kind of a throwaway talent. And as years gone by, I've realized, wait a minute, that's the foundation for sewing, for designing clothes, for architecture. You know, so this little thing that was really just kind of a funny thing that I could do actually was the seed that could have led me in more quickly into arenas where I would be more of a success.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the ease hides, the ease trivializes it because it's not, you know, so clear how you take that thing that's so easy for you to do and open it up into a flower, like get it beyond the seed stage.
Yes. And let me ask you a question. Did you enjoy doing those tests?
Yes.
Did you like them? Did you find them challenging
really
and fun?
I really enjoyed it a lot. You know, I looked forward to it. The same with the geometry that you do with a straight edge and a compass, you know, the constructive,
mm-hmm.
that I could do too. And when I realized it's the one time in my life where I actually looked forward to tests. I wanted to get things wrong so I could learn how to do them right. And I wanted them to. I wanted a challenge because it was – the pleasure was in learning as much as in succeeding. Now, of course, at the time when I was a girl, they were, you know, telling us that women couldn't be architects and women couldn't be mm-hmm. mathematicians. And so it was a particular situation where nobody else was really looking for any special talent because you're pretty much, it was felt that my path was, you know, preordained being female.
Right.
But I still think probably people have the same experience where they just don't quite recognize the gift because the gift is just it's just something that's so much a part of you it doesn't seem particularly noticeable.
Mhm. And that's why it's so important to do this quiet mm-hmm. contemplation and write these things down because the fact that you love doing it, you know, was a huge clue. It's not just
exactly.
that I'm good at it, because we can be good at something and still not like it and not want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was
yes.
good at financial planning. I was good at budgeting and forecasting. But I don't want to do it except for my own business, and I can do that. But I don't want to get paid to do that ever again. But I could do it if I had to.
I mean, I studied
yes.
script supervising, and I was very good at that. But it was the one thing where I had to sit on the edge of the bed and say, you must go in and do the job. You know, they're counting
mm-hmm.
on you. The editors need your notes. You have to go do it. So I did one job, and that was it.
Yeah.
So, but I was good at it.
I call that grim
like
persistence.
Say,
yeah.
Yes, grim persistence, exactly.
Grim persistence. You know, we clench our fists and we say, you know, I have to do this and I will do it because it's expected of me or it's how I earn my
mm-hmm.
money or, you know, we do that when we do anything like dieting or any of those shoulds, I will do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it only lasts as long as we hold out and there's no joy at all in that.
No,
so
I just completed my agreement with that production and then I knew, okay, you know, I wasted time in quotes studying this, but I really hadn't because what I had learned helped me in every other aspect of filmmaking and even writing and lots of things in my life. So you're right.
Yeah.
You know, what you do that doesn't lead directly to a job or a career may actually be an unusual foundation that will help you
mm-hmm.
in the thing that you do find to be your talent and your bliss.
Yes, and it also gives us clues into what we don't want. You know,
exactly.
I have women say to me, well, I don't know what I want. And I said, well, then find out what you don't want and then flip it. You know, don't concentrate on what you don't want, but at least figure out what you don't want, and then what is the opposite of that? You know,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we need to be looking for. We don't want to concentrate on, well, you know, I don't want to do that work. It's like, well, what is the opposite of that work? And then that's what I need to be looking at. You know, not the
mm-hmm.
not putting all the energy into, you know, please don't make me ever do that again. It's like, oh, the flip of that is this. And what I
yeah,
think
like,
we're
like,
all looking for.
I learned that lesson.
And I think what we're all looking for, sort of a common thing, is that we're all looking for a sense of freedom in this. And we want to
mm-hmm.
feel free about what it is that we're doing. We want to have joy in it, but we want to also know that we're at choice. And until we know that, you know, we have chosen this for ourselves, we feel stuck. You know, I have a niece who many years ago, she's only 6 years younger than me, so we're more like sisters. And she had gone through the program, the seminar company I worked for, and she was at the third 5-day retreat, and you know, she was talking about these have-tos. She was an accountant, and she hated to wear pumps and pantyhose. She wanted to wear jeans and cowboy boots. She goes, but I have to. I don't have a choice. And I said, well, you do have a choice. You just don't like the choices. You know, your choice is you either wear what they tell you or you wear something else, and they will fire you. But that is still a choice. So if you can wrap your brain around the idea that you are choosing to stay in this job and abide by their rules, at least for now, then you'll be happier there. But otherwise, we see ourselves as victims of this circumstance. But right now, I'm choosing to be here. So if I'm choosing to be here, how can I make it work for me?
That's
now, the only time
point.
I don't think that works is if we're in, like, an abusive relationship. We don't play that game with ourselves. We just get out and then figure it out later. But if it's something that, you know, that we want to change but we just can't change it right now, we have to do some work, then we need to sort of make it our friend and go, okay, you know, given that I'm living in this place I don't like right now, what can I do? What can I do to feel like I like it here for now? You know, how can I make this work for me, knowing that this is my choice? And, you know, I really do believe it's a very simplistic, you know, idea that we are always at choice about how we react to anything. We may not be at choice about what happens to us, but we can always choose how we respond. And that's sort of a basic 101 kind of concept, but I think we tend to forget it sometimes. And, you know, the victim is a lot more interesting, you know, or appealing. It's easier to fly into the victim place, and then we don't have to do anything, take any responsibility. But I appreciate that. I think that you made a great point. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Let me say thank you, too. I'm going to hang up and listen. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling in. Okay. I think we're pretty close to the end here. So what
well,
I want
I think we have looked at this topic from all different angles today. It's been great.
There you go. What I want to do, let's see. I think we want to walk away. I think the prayer was pretty much affirmation for today, but if anybody would like one specifically, I think it would be, oh, I don't know, I'm walking in my purpose based on what I have always loved to do and be.
I like that.
Today I'm walking in my purpose based on what I've always loved to do and be. So other than that, we'll give you pretty much the wrap-up here. I appreciate your time with us, Ginny. What is next for you? I'll give you a minute to put that out there for us, if there is a next.
Well, next, yes. Well, coming up this week, for those who are in the Maryland area, D.C. area, Northern Virginia, I'm doing my signature workshop called Getting Out of Your Own Way, which, you know, takes a lot of what we're talking about today. It starts this Friday. It's a one-day workshop, but I'm offering it on 3 days, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. It's at my home in Lutherville, which is in the Towson area of Baltimore County. And they can go to my website, jennyroberson.com, and click on upcoming events and scroll down, and they'll see the 3 days there with more information about what I'm doing. Pre-registration is required, but people will pay at the end based on the value received and their ability to pay. And I will tell you, I'm really good at this stuff, and you'll leave with a plan, and you'll leave with a support system in place to actually make this year be different from last year and go after something that you really, really want and start to make it happen.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I will put you on hold, wrap up this show, and I appreciate your time, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Great. Thank you, Cindy.
Okay. Again, you have been listening to Ginny Robertson. You can find her at jennyrobertson.com and also on Facebook at Ginny Robertson, R-O-B-E-R-T-S-O-N. And also at On Purpose Networking for Women and On Purpose Social Media. You can get a hold of me, Cindy, at PurposeTalkRadio.com. Our website is PurposeTalkRadio.com, as I just said. There you will find out information about our upcoming guests, our past guests, and also be able to listen to the archives of the show. All of our shows are recorded, so if you have been listening today and want to hear this again, it is available to you at the same link where you were able to find it to listen originally on Blog Talk Radio. Next week, our guest is going to be psychic Dawn Katzen. So So she will be a part of our show. First, we will talk to her a bit about how she came to find her purpose in doing that, and then she will do some readings briefly. And if you want longer readings, you'll have to connect with her personally on that. And other than that, let's see. Again, if you want to sponsor or donate to the show, PurposeTalkRadio.com is the site for that. In closing, we have the song again, I Am Who I Am, by True Trinity. Their website, TRUETRINITY.com. Rachel Martinez, Jillian Clark, and myself. And as we stand out and listen to the world and take the moments to be quiet and find out for ourselves what our purpose is. Take those moments, as Ginny said, to write down what we've enjoyed doing, what we want to be doing, what other people say we should be doing or that we do good. She gave us a whole lot of questions that we can look at. What kind of purpose have I been in the world? How have I grown up? What have I enjoyed going through life? What do I love most doing? How to spend my free time? And all those questions, and look for those keys. We will truly be able to find our purpose. We can then take that purpose and take it into the business world, take it into our social life, and take it out to those who might be wanting to experience what we have to offer. In addition to listening to our own internal voices, we want to listen to those around us to some extent. We don't want to listen to people that are shooting us down or saying, you don't want to do that, or worse yet, why aren't you doing what I think you should be doing? We want to listen to Spirit, God, our guidance system, to determine what is ours to be doing and what is ours to have. So I thank you for listening today. This was Purpose Talk Radio. I am Cindy Freeman, your host. I look forward to hearing and listening to chats on Purpose Talk Radio Conversations on Facebook, because we do keep that discussion going throughout the week. And other than that, I say to you all, soul blessings, and thank you for listening. We are on the air every week, Monday, noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, and 8 p.m. in the UK. Oh, yes, I am also looking for other co-hosts to put shows on during the week if you are interested to get a hold of me. So, again, I wish you all soul blessings. Thank you very much, and have a great week.
I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.